on radio, online and mobile. You're with SBS Radio.
Good evening and welcome to SBS World News Radio. I'm Peggy Giacomelos.
And I'm Michael Tomalaris. Coming up tonight, the Treasurer calls for a new wave of productivity growth to maintain Australian living standards.
Also on the program,
there was a very large spike on and about the 20th of April.
A surge of applications for Australian citizenship this week after some controversial government reforms were blocked in the Senate.
And
for the last 18 months, we've been implementing recommendations that a bill have been, really been about making Victoria Police a more equitable workplace and one in which women can really be safe and prosperous.
More than 100 Australian business leaders back efforts to stop everyday sexism in the workplace.
Those stories and more coming up in the next half hour.
Good evening. With the news at 6 o'clock, I'm Mike Tomalaris. The Australian Federal Police is raiding Australian Workers' Union offices in Melbourne and Sydney. In a statement, the AFP confirms it's executing a search warrant in support of the Registered Organisations Commission. The ROC is the federal government's independent regulator of unions and employer associations. The investigation reportedly relates to whether donations made to activist group GetUp were authorised under union rules. Meanwhile, the Prime Minister has dismissed claims the Federal Police's operational capacity is under threat from government funding cuts. Malcolm Turnbull has told Question Time the $321 million the AFP received in the May budget was unprecedented and the largest single funding boost for domestic policing in a decade. But earlier, in a Senate estimates hearing, AFP Commissioner Mark Colvin revealed a funding shortfall over the next 4 years would affect a fraud, drug, organised crime and child exploitation operations. Opposition leader Bill Shorten says the cuts are having a big impact.
How can the Prime Minister claim today that he's cracking down on drug importers on a scale never seen before when an AFP leak says that thanks to his $184 million cuts to the AFP, the Federal Police was unable to properly investigate the importation of 1.6 tonnes of cocaine and an additional 600 kilogram cocaine importation from Mexico?
Seven federal parliamentarians with questions over their dual citizenship status should know their fate by the end of the week. The High Court has announced it will deliver its ruling at 2:15pm on Friday in Canberra. Government ministers Barnaby Joyce and Fiona Nash, ex-minister Matt Canavan, former Greens senators Larissa Waters and Scott Ludlam, One Nation senator Malcolm Roberts and crossbencher Nick Xenophon have all been referred to the court over their dual citizenship, which could disqualify them from Parliament. If National Party leader and Deputy Prime Minister Barnaby Joyce is ruled ineligible because of his New Zealand citizenship, the government would face a by-election in his northern New South Wales seat of New England. A 43-year-old Melbourne man has appeared in court facing terrorism-related charges after he was arrested in raids on his home in the city's southeast. Victoria Police say invalid pensioner Isa Kogoglu gave about $5,000 through a website to a 33-year-old US citizen fighting for Islamic State in Syria. He's been charged with supporting persons engaged in the Syrian conflict. Commander John Beveridge of the Australian Federal Police says the 16-month investigation was conducted by the Joint Counter-Terrorism Team made up of Victoria Police, the AFP and ASIO.
This is a wonderful example of the team working with our international partners and chasing the money trails and the electronic evidence around the world. One of the reasons it's taken so long for us to come to this point is to gather evidence offshore. It's very, very difficult for the investigators to gather evidence in relation to our laws and the international laws, and we've got to follow the path to get it before a court of law.
China's ruling Communist Party has made President Xi Jinping the most powerful leader since Mao Zedong. It's voted to enshrine his political ideology in its constitution. Xi's concept of socialism with Chinese characteristics for a new era was added at the close of the party's twice a decade major congress. No other leader has had a self-named ideology included in the document while in office since Mao, the founder of modern China. Xi has described his concept as central to setting China on the path of decisive victory in building a moderately prosperous society. The Prime Minister has backed the ability of backbench MPs to receive income from third-party sources. He was responding to an internal government inquiry, which cleared a former Cabinet Minister, Bruce Bilson, of inappropriate behaviour. Mr. Bilson started working for the Franchise Council of Australia while he was still a Liberal MP. Malcolm Turnbull told Question Time there was a transparent system in place.
The members' interest disclosure system, which all honourable members here are very familiar with, does provide for the disclosure of income over and above a member's parliamentary salary, and it's open to the honourable member or anyone else with an interest in the matter to go through all those disclosures and determine how many backbenchers are in receipt of income from third-party sources.
Three out of four eligible Australians have returned their ballot papers in the same-sex marriage survey. The Australian Bureau of Statistics says it has received an estimated 11.9 million survey forms. That's almost 75%. Meanwhile, Australia Post has blamed thieves for dumping surveys in Melbourne and Canberra suburbs. Speaking at a Senate Estimates Committee, Acting Managing Director Christine Corbett says postal officials acted as soon as they found out about the thefts.
So we were contacted by the media and were both via our social media and media sites and working with ABS and obviously the communication to any affected residents who may have been impacted by those two thefts were told to get replacement forms from ABS as per their processes.
And finally, a look at tomorrow's weather for Wednesday in Perth, a possible shower, a top of 23 degrees. In Adelaide, partly cloudy, 24. Melbourne, showers, tops of 20. Hobart, a possible light shower, 18. In Canberra, a shower or two, 25 degrees. In Wollongong, Sydney and Newcastle, a possible shower and temperatures in the mid to high 20s. Brisbane, mostly sunny, 28. Cairns, mostly sunny, 30. And Darwin, much the same, 34 degrees. And Peggy, that's it from me. More on these stories coming up on SBS World News at 6:30.
Thanks to Mike Tomalaris there. And you're listening to SBS World News Radio on this Tuesday evening with Peggy Giacomelos. The time is 7 past the hour. Sweeping changes to health, education and our cities would see more jobs created, wages boosted and our current standard of living maintained. That's the message of a report by the Productivity Commission introduced by Treasurer Scott Morrison today. As Andrea Niehoff reports, Mr. Morrison has implored local, state and federal leaders to take these recommendations seriously or face an uncertain future.
According to the Treasurer, things need to change if we want to maintain living standards. Scott Morrison has warned that if Australians want to see an improvement in wages and the creation of more jobs, reform is needed. He was at the launch of the first of five yearly reviews released by the Productivity Commission. It's described as a lookout across the landscape of factors and influences that may affect Australia's economic performance over the medium term. But Mr. Morrison cautioned that the Productivity Commission recommendations are just that, recommendations.
The new path we are encouraged to embark upon is signposted by a series of key insights, pointing to the need for, amongst other things, more integrated and patient-centred healthcare to create more healthy workers, a more proactive education system that supports better teaching to create more proficient, more resilient and more adaptive workers, and more functional cities that do not choke our economy.
Areas targeted for change include health, higher education, taxation and innovation. Factors such as the end of the mining boom, a slowing of returns from technological advances, as well as the impact of an ageing population on the workforce, means the nation needs to raise its productivity growth to around 2.5% to compensate. One idea has proposed linking university funding to the success of students rather than research. This is something Labor's education spokeswoman Tanya Plibersek has dismissed on Sky News.
What we know is that work is becoming increasingly complex. People will be having multiple jobs across multiple careers throughout their working lives. So initial training is important, but lifelong learning continues to be important.
The nation's cities have come under criticism too for not being functional enough, with claims that more efficiency could increase national growth by almost $30 billion. Speaking on Sky News, Assistant Minister for Cities Angus Taylor admits there are problems.
Too much congestion has been increasing in recent years. We've seen that planning has been extremely restrictive and we haven't had enough houses built in the fastest growing areas. And of course, where we've built them, we haven't always supported them with the services and infrastructure we need.
Reconfiguring healthcare, greater cooperation on reforming the energy market and better participation from local government were also mentioned in the report. The opposition's Treasury spokesman, Chris Bowen, says Labor has been advocating similar ideas for years. He's expressed scepticism at how seriously the government will take the suggestions.
It'll take more than a Productivity Commission report for this government to give it. If there's something sensible in this report, we'll welcome it. Based on this reporting, it, as Mr. Currie says, will closely mimic Labor's agenda. We leave this government in our wake when it comes to setting the agenda with inclusive growth and investing in our people through human capital. Well, I hope that Scott Morrison gets the message today. I hope that he listens to that inclusive growth agenda. And more importantly, I hope he changes his policies to reflect that.
That's the opposition's Treasury spokesman, Chris Bowen, ending that report by Andrea Niehoff. And you're listening to SBS World News Radio. It's 11 past the hour still in Australia, and the Immigration Department has been hit with a surge of applications for Australian citizenship this week after some controversial government reforms were blocked in the Senate. SBS political correspondent James Elton Pym explains what's behind this spike in applications.
You might remember that the government's been trying to pass a major overhaul of the citizenship system here in Australia, and those changes would have imposed a tough new English exam that was going to be a fair bit harder than the current test. And they also wanted to make permanent residents wait for 4 years before they applied to be a citizen, instead of just one. Now, Peter Dutton, the Immigration Minister, announced those changes way back in April, but the Senate didn't like them. They were blocked by the Greens and Labor and the Nick Xenophon group. Last week, they were finally struck off the notice paper after the government missed a deadline to pass them through the Senate. And yesterday in Senate estimates, an official from the Immigration Department revealed that that caused a big rush in applications in the past week. Let's have a listen to what she had to say.
There was a very large spike on and about the 20th of April. And then there was kind of a plateau which was lower than compared to 12 months ago, and then since the announcement last week there's been another surge.
There's been another surge since last week.
Yep.
And James, why has everyone been waiting to apply?
Well, Peter Dutton originally wanted to make these changes retrospective, so thousands of people who applied after the announcement in April were going to be processed under the new rules that were proposed when they passed the Senate. But after the Senate defeat last week, Dutton gave up on that. He said the 118,000 people who are currently waiting on their applications being processed will have them processed under the normal existing rules. But we can only assume that what was happening is many permanent residents were holding back in the hope that something like this would happen. And it turns out they were right.
And just finally, James, are those citizenship reforms ever coming back or are they gone for good?
They are not gone for good. Mr. Dutton has confirmed that the government will have another go. They'll redraft their citizenship reforms in a bid to pass them again through the Senate. He said the government was willing to accept migrants who pass an entrance exam in English at band 5 on the international testing standard rather than band 6 as was previously proposed. And that tougher band 6 test was a major sticking point in the Senate, especially for the crucial Nick Xenophon team on the crossbench. Band 5 under the IETLS testing system is described as being a modest English user rather than a competent one at band 6. So that That willingness to compromise may yet convince the Senate crossbench, but as of now, there's no indication that any of the senators who voted against the bill have changed their minds.
Thanks to SBS political correspondent James Elton Pym there. And we want to know what you think of the major news stories of the day. To share your comments, just go to Facebook and Twitter at SBS News. It's almost a quarter past the hour. Peggy Giacomelos with you. And coming up...
For the last 18 months, we've been implementing recommendations that have really been about making Victoria Police a more equitable workplace and one in which women can really be safe and prosperous.
More than 100 Australian business leaders back efforts to stop everyday sexism in the workplace. That story soon after this break. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has recently won a resounding victory in a snap election in a campaign dominated by Mr. Abe's promise to deal firmly with threats from North Korea. The threat posed by North Korea is one that resonates strongly with the residents of Hiroshima, a city that more than 70 years ago survived a devastating bomb attack. It's been a dangerous time in the lead-up to the recent Japanese election. North Korea fired two missiles over Japan in the space of a month, heightening tensions between the two countries. The missile tests have also rekindled the memory of the devastating attack more than 70 years ago on the western city of Hiroshima. The bombing on August 6, 1945, killed an estimated 140,000 people by the end of that year. It was followed by the atomic bombing of Nagasaki, which killed about 40,000 people instantly. This lifelong resident of Hiroshima, now in his 80s, says memories of what occurred in 1945 remain, and he fears what the future holds.
I didn't experience it myself, but my mother and father told me that there was nothing left here after the bomb. By the time I was in my 20s, we had rebuilt this city into something I think is wonderful. Around this station was still like it was in the past until about 2 years ago. It's been totally redeveloped, and it's surprising. I'm scared. I'm afraid of what might happen. I'm against what North Korea is doing. I'm against nuclear weapons. Hiroshima was bombed. They're terrible.
North Korea carried out its first nuclear test in 2006, and successive blasts are believed to have been aimed at refining designs and reliability, as well as increasing yield. Its fifth detonation in September last year caused a 5.3 magnitude quake, and according to Seoul, had a 10 kiloton yield, still less than the 15 kiloton US device which destroyed Hiroshima in 1945. North Korea carried out a sixth nuclear test in September, more powerful than any it has previously detonated. Out for a day together, these young students in Hiroshima believe the threat posed by North Korea remains real.
I think that peace is really important for people in Hiroshima. Right now, we have the missile threat from North Korea and Trump. For me, I think that dialogue is the only way.
Hiroshima has a history of being attacked with a nuclear bomb, so I'm afraid of the missile threat from North Korea, and I think that there must be another way to work out our differences.
Almost 2 million people visited Hiroshima in 2016. Curious crowds, interested in so-called dark tourism, travelling to sites known as places where disasters, violence or war have occurred. The city has preserved the memory of the world's first nuclear attack, with monuments bearing witness to the attack. Hiroshima's local government also wants to promote itself as a place that promotes peace, outlining how it hopes to contribute to the global abolition of nuclear weapons worldwide. This woman, a lifelong resident of Hiroshima, says she feels for the people of North Korea but also condemns the actions of the North Korean government.
So many families in Hiroshima were destroyed in the war, but now we're a city where we can enjoy our sport and leisure as well as other things.
I think that while we don't forget the past, Hiroshima is a place where we think about peace. I think that North Korean people are just like us, and I empathize with them on that level. But we can't go on living in a situation where their missiles are flying over our heads.
And you're listening to SBS Radio, where the time is almost 22 past the hour. I'm Peggy Giacomelos. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget, you can also check out podcasts of all our stories, plus much more on sbs.com.au/news/audio. Coming up...
Netball, I did absolutely everything. Anything I could do, I just fell in love with sport. So I always knew... an athlete would be my life, but to play beach volleyball probably was not the first one coming to my mind from Kingaroy.
We meet an Australian beach volleyball couple who have just arrived back in Australia after claiming three consecutive gold medals in three overseas tournaments. That story in a little while. But before that, more than 100 of Australia's top businessmen have pledged to eradicate everyday sexism in the workplace. They're inviting other leaders to join them in identifying and eliminating unacceptable behaviour in Australian organisations. Michelle Rimmer reports.
From news headlines to viral online campaigns, the issue of the treatment of women in the workplace is one that's discussed around the world. Here in Australia, the country's top businessmen are now starting to put their words into action, taking practical steps to identify and eliminate everyday sexism at their place of work. Victoria's Police Chief Commissioner Graham Ashton is one of those vowing to stamp out sexism in his workplace.
For the last 18 months, we've been implementing recommendations that have really been about making Victoria Police a more equitable workplace and one in which women can really be safe and prosper.
He says sexism in the police force is something he's witnessed firsthand.
Police have very much a black humour or often approach to things. Sometimes that can become gendered. There can be jokes that are actually not appropriate for those reasons, and certainly not appropriate for women to be exposed to hearing that and be party to those conversations. Can be very exclusionary. It can be very exclusionary conduct. So for us, that's an area that sort of I've certainly in my policing career, particularly as a junior police officer, witnessed and saw.
Chief executives from companies including NAB, the AFL, Medibank and Qantas are among 100 businessmen that have formed a group called the Male Champions of Change. They've worked alongside Federal Sex Discrimination Commissioner Kate Jenkins and interviewed 6,000 Australian employees to produce a report on the issue. Kate Jenkins says it uncovered a number of issues.
Stories about women who were told that they wouldn't be sent on promotional opportunities or training because they were pregnant or because they worked part-time. So the idea that they weren't as focused on their careers. Expectations that women were more suited for support roles like HR or legal roles than operational roles like running the factories. Comments made more to women than men about their appearance rather than their competence to do their job.
The report found sexist remarks disguised as jokes are one of the most common forms of sexism that needs to be eradicated. For example, one survey respondent says she was told, "Make sure you wear a low-cut top when you meet that client." The report also looked at gender labelling, for example, when women are criticised for being too aggressive. Ms. Jenkin says such behaviour is detrimental to both individuals and the workplace as a whole.
So the consequences really play out in the workplace. So they can undermine work employers' initiatives to promote a more equal workplace. They can affect the performance of the work group. It can mean that the best people are not being promoted. It can mean that individuals particularly have trouble achieving their best in the workplace.
That's Kate Jenkins ending that report compiled by Michelle Rimmer, and it's 25 past the hour. Peggy Giacomelos with you. Thanks for your company this evening. And don't forget, you can also check out our stories via podcast at any time. Just go to the website for more details. We'll have the latest news headlines coming up in a couple of minutes' time. But before that, going to sport. And the world of beach volleyball is reverberating at the exploits of Indigenous star Taliqua Clancy and her Peruvian-born partner, Mariafe Atarcho del Sola. The pair arrived back in Australia today after claiming three consecutive gold medals in three tournaments in Japan, China and Indonesia. John Baldock reports.
Taliqua Clancy was born in the Queensland town of Kingaroy and enjoyed playing netball, running and swimming as a child. The 25-year-old admitted beach volleyball was the last thing she thought she'd end up playing.
Netball, I did absolutely everything. Anything I could do, I just fell in love with sport. So I always knew an athlete would be my life, but to play beach volleyball probably was not the first one coming to my mind from Kingaroy.
Clancy and her new partner, Mariafe Artacho del Sola, are set to represent their country at next year's Commonwealth Games on the Gold Coast. The fact a rising Indigenous star has teamed up with del Sola, who only arrived in Australia from Peru aged 11 speaking no English, proves there are no barriers to success. The three gold medals won in Japan, China and Indonesia highlight that. And del Sola explains they're not the only ones with multicultural backgrounds playing beach volleyball for Australia.
That's what Australia is all about. You know, it's a multicultural country, and we have a few, you know, me being from Peru originally, T having the Indigenous background. We also have one of our other athletes who's from Tonga background. So we really do have a bit of a mixture, which, you know, we all bring our own backgrounds into it.
Their three consecutive gold medals have captured the imagination of not just the local volleyball scene, but also around the world. But Clancy isn't worried about becoming targeted by their rivals.
I think that also means that you are being successful and you want to be the hunted. I don't want to be the hunter, so I hope they are talking about it and I hope they are getting a bit worried.
A lot can happen between now and next year's Commonwealth Games, but for Taliqua, a constant source of pride is her Indigenous heritage.
It's extremely important to me. I'm very proud to be Aboriginal, and as much as I can, I love to give back to the community, and it is important for me to just, I don't know, to bring, play my best and to put on the green and gold, but also to have that blood in me is, I'm just extremely proud.
And if they continue in the rich vein of form they're currently in, Clancy will become even more of a role model for those kids dreaming of sporting success.
Thanks to John Baldock for that story. It's 28 past the hour. Let's take a look at what's making news before we go here on SBS Radio. Federal police raid Australia Workers Union offices in Sydney and Melbourne in a probe over donations. The fate of seven dual citizenship parliamentarians to be known on Friday when the High Court hands down its ruling. A man appears in court after terror raids and an arrest by police in Melbourne, and a political row breaks out over federal police funding, with the Prime Minister dismissing claims their operational capacity is under threat from government cuts. Three out of four eligible Australians have returned their ballot papers in the same-sex marriage survey, and the Treasurer calls for a new wave of productivity growth to maintain Australian living standards. The head of the Australian wool industry apologises for spying on a focus group of stud breeders through a one-way mirror, and the federal independent MP Andrew Wilkie claims a fourth whistleblower has come forward alleging illegal poker machine tampering in Melbourne's Crown Casino. And Australia to boost its counter-terrorism presence in the Philippines as the country seeks to counter the spread of Islamic State in the southern regions. Moving overseas, and China's ruling Communist Party votes to enshrine President Xi Jinping's political ideology in its constitution, making him the most powerful leader since Mao Zedong. And activists say more than 100 civilians were killed by IS militants in central Syrian town before it was retaken by the Syrian army on Saturday. Let's take a look at tomorrow's weather across the country. A possible shower for Perth with a top of 23 degrees. In Adelaide, partly cloudy and 24. Showers for Melbourne, 20 degrees. A possible light shower in Hobart and 18. A shower or two for Canberra, 25 degrees. Much the same for Wollongong and Sydney. In Newcastle, also a possible shower and 26. In Brisbane, mostly sunny and 28. Mostly sunny too for Cairns and 30. And much the same for Darwin, a top of 34 degrees. That's the program for this evening. You can catch Janice Peterson on SBS World News at right now, actually. And you can catch our features online anytime at sbs.com.au/news. Peggy Giacomelos with you this evening. Thanks for listening.